In this episode, we're taking a look at the expansion of Christianity into the New World. Now, following Columbus's voyages of the end of the 15th century to the Caribbean, the expansion of Christianity into the New World was chiefly dependent on the two great colonial powers of Portugal and Spain. From the outset of their adventures, a religious intention was central to the efforts of the explorers, however secondary it may have become to the conquest and treasure seeking for themselves and their royal patrons back home in Europe. By means of a papal bull in 1493, Pope Alexander VI divided the world between the two kingdoms of Spain and Portugal. Although the line was later moved to allow Portugal to colonize Brazil, the original division was a line that was drawn from north to southwest of the Azores Islands. Spain was given the West Indies and the Americas, while Portugal, because it had already explored the west coast of Africa and had moved towards India through Vasco da Gama's explorations, they were given the right to colonize Africa, India, and the Far East. Now, it seems monumentally arrogant to us today that these Europeans assume that they were discovering lands that already had people living there for centuries. How do you plan a colony in a place that those living there for generations have called their home? Yet that was the attitude of many Europeans in the late 15th century. And as the scope of geography for the New World was understood, other Europeans joined the rush to grab as much territory as they could. Because religion was a central and defining part of the European worldview, well, of course, they took their faiths with them. Priests accompanied da Gama's voyages as they were equally part of Spanish colonization in the New World, combining the roles of missionaries, explorers, secretaries, and even chroniclers. Now, often they belonged to religious orders like the Franciscans and the Dominicans, and then later the Jesuits got on board. It was with a sense of religious mission, as well as the longing to acquire wealth from indigenous peoples, that men like Cortes and Pizarro began their conquests of the Aztec and Inca empires. Now, modern students of history know that the Spanish conquistadors seemed not to think that forced baptisms of Native Americans was really all that bad of an option. What we would do well to remember is that they didn't originate that policy. Charlemagne had practiced a similar program of forced conversions all the way back in the 9th century. That, of course, doesn't make it right, but it does provide us a little historical context. Cortes was born in Medellin, Spain. He attended the University of Salamanca and left Spain for Cuba in 1511. At the age of 33, he mounted an expedition against the Aztec capital of Mexico with only 700 fellow Spaniards, but they were equipped with cannons and muskets, reinforced by thousands of Indian allies who had been brutally dominated by the bloodthirsty Aztecs for generations. Although he experienced a reverse after a massacre of Aztec nobles and temporarily had to withdraw from the capital of Tenochtitlan, he returned to the city in August of 1520, systematically destroyed it. He founded and built Mexico City on the same site. He became governor of New Spain and captain general of the forces in 1522, titles that were confirmed by the Emperor Charles V that we've been studying in the Reformation, when Cortes returned to Europe in 1529. He was later replaced by a viceroy and died in 1547. Now, his contemporary, Pizarro, directed his attention to the Inca Empire down in Peru. He obtained authority from Spain for his conquests in 1528 and 29 and attacked the Incas in 1530. A massacre of Incas assembled at Cajamarca was followed by, of course, the capture of the Inca capital at Cuzco in November of 1530. Now, you may remember from an earlier episode, one of the major debates between the church and civil rulers of Europe was over who had the right to appoint bishops. Well, there were seasons when civil rulers took control of this. It was usually the church that retained control over church appointments. But the New World presented a new challenge and opportunity. The Pope was already very busy with internal affairs, the threat of the reformers, to be bothered with, selecting hundreds of new bishops for lands that hadn't even been properly mapped yet. And so he granted the monarchs of Spain and Portugal the right to select church leaders in their new colonies. On the colonialist front, a system was developed called encomienda, and it was by this method that a number of Indians were assigned to a colonist landlord. He was given rights to both tribute and labor, but it was understood that he was responsible for Christianizing those committed to his charge. And as we'd suspect, the encomienda system became a byword for oppression and cruelty, resulted in the virtual slavery of the Indians after its introduction in 1503. brave Dominican priest to denounce the system, with one of the earliest protesters being Antonio de Montesinos on the island of Hispaniola in 1511. Bartholomew de las Casas was another Dominican whose father accompanied Columbus on one of his voyages. When he witnessed the live burial of an Indian leader in 1514 in Cuba, he became a champion of Indian rights for the next 50 years. Now, de las Casas had to confront a widespread European mindset based on a philosophical position that went all the way back to Aristotle. This viewed the Native Americans as inherently less human and so fit to be slaves by nature, an inferior race intended for menial labor and to serve their betters. He worked tirelessly in America and Spain to change this attitude and to convince those in authority that the use of force was contrary to a Christian understanding of the Indians as worthy of respect because they were created in God's image. His efforts to lobby support at home in influential circles received recognition from the Emperor, Charles V, against the activities of the colonists. It included a debate in 1550 at Valladolid with the Aristotelian philosopher and scholar, the famous Sepulveda. Now, before he died, de las Casas' campaign for just laws for the Indians was responsible for what's called the New Laws of 1542 and 43, which prohibited Indian slavery and caused the Council for the Indies to be reorganized. After serving as Bishop of Chiapas, de las Casas used his pen on behalf of the Indians, most famously in his brief account of the destruction of the Indies. It was a hard-hitting critique of Spanish practices, in which some claimed he exaggerated their abuses. But the work was widely read and proved influential in turning the tide in Europe toward a greater empathy towards the people of the New World. The Franciscans and Dominicans were the first in the field of the New World from 1510 onwards, but in the second phase of the mission, the Jesuits moved in and became more active. José de Anchieta was a great Jesuit missionary who gave 44 years of his life to his mission, became known as the Apostle of Brazil. He was one of the founders of both Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro Jesuit missions. Another heroic figure and defender of Indian rights in Brazil was the Jesuit Antonio Vieira, who in equal measure opposed both the Inquisition and colonists. He was admired by King John IV of Portugal, but he was almost lynched in 1661 after the king's death. In the 17th century, Jesuits were active in Bolivia, Uruguay, and Paraguay. In the early 1600s, they created a missionary system known as the Reductions. Now, these were settlements of Native Americans that sought to protect them from European colonization while at the same time evangelizing them. In total, these communities comprised some 100,000 people. In each settlement had a church, a school, workshops, and led an ordered life. The colonists resented the removal of their labor pool, but the Jesuits steadfastly defended the Indians against enslavement. General agitation against the Jesuit order in Europe and the colonies of the New World led to their expulsion from Portuguese territories in 1759 and then from Spanish possessions 8 years later. The order was suppressed in the New World in 1773. Now, all of this was a disastrous blow to the Reductions. But it also exposed the weakness of a form of mission that was essentially paternalistic, with little or no authority being passed over to the indigenous people or attempts to develop leadership among the Indian population. With the removal of the Jesuit leaders, the Reductions collapsed and whole villages were engulfed by jungle after 150 years of being oases of Christian community. Now, the region of modern Venezuela was an area of further Jesuit exploits. They penetrated the jungles of the Amazon to reach large numbers of Indians. One early Jesuit pioneer, Rafael Ferrer, he began a mission in 1599 that cost him his life by martyrdom in 1611. Further Jesuit efforts achieved more. By 1661, many thousands were baptized in the region. The Jesuits found that these people were less easily led than the Guarani people who lived around the region of Sao Paulo. There was opposition from the Portuguese, but with the assistance of the Franciscans, 500,000 people were reached in the upper Amazonian region. Central America was pioneered by the Franciscans, the Dominicans, and a Catholic order we've not met before. They were known as the Mercedarians. Founded by the Spaniard Peter Nolasco in 1235, their original goal was to ransom captives and redeem properties that had fallen into Muslim hands during the Moorish occupation of Spain. The Mercedarians began as a lay order. By the 14th century, they had been taken over by the clergy. Now, following the Reconquista, that's when the Moors were expelled from Spain, the Mercedarians continued their mission by going to Muslim lands and seeking the freedom of Christian captives. Gradually, they included academic, theological, and educational work. The order also then branched out into an order of nuns as well. They joined the Franciscans and the Dominicans in taking the gospel to Central America. The first church in Panama was built in 1510, very early. Missionaries entered Guatemala in 1526. And by 1600, there were 22 Franciscan, 14 Dominican bases in Guatemala. Now, Mexico, after the era of Cortes, attracted the orders so that Franciscans landed at Veracruz in 1524, Dominicans in 1526, and Augustinians in 1533. Later came the Capuchins and the Jesuits. A Franciscan by the name of Juan de Zumarraga, he became the Bishop of Mexico City in 1528 and proved to be a firm defender of Indian rights, a believer in indigenous clergy. He became Archbishop of Mexico in 1546. The University of Mexico, which was founded in 1553, reflected the church's emphasis on education. In the north of the country, a famous Jesuit missionary named Eusebio Kino arrived in 1681 and did missionary work in Baja California, and then up into the state of Arizona, reaching as far as what would later be known as Colorado. Described as a modest, gentle, humble man who was an upholder of the welfare of the Indians, he traveled perpetually in the interest of mission. He hoped to reach the fierce Apaches, but he died before he could in 1711. Before their formal removal from the region, the Jesuits achieved 37 bases in Baja California by 1767. In the modern state of California, a string of Franciscan missions are still to be found between San Diego and San Francisco. Father Juan Apero Serra, born in Majorca, he became the leader of the mission and founded the communities of Monterey, Carmel, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and several others. While many of the original buildings of the missions are gone, Catholic churches continue on in several of these sites to this very day. By 1800, some 100,000 California Indians, many from the Chumash tribe, had been reached by the mission, and 18 Franciscan mission compounds were established. Now, at least some of the thrust to the north was driven by Spanish fear of the Russian incursion, which was moving south from their base in Alaska. Father Serra also spent some years establishing a work in Texas. Now, critics claim that Serra's methods ranged from harsh to brutal. Lashings of the Indians were used liberally in the missions for infractions as small as asking for more food. The friars kept meticulous records, so historians were able to document this treatment. The problem comes in interpreting these records. The language isn't the problem. It's the cultural context that makes interpretation difficult. You see, on one hand, Serra was devoted to protecting the Indians from exploitation by adventurers and settlers who wanted to reduce the native population to slavery. Serra understood people are led to faith by kindness and love rather than heavy-handedness. That he traveled so far, pioneering several missions, proves that he wasn't driven by some kind of, you know, personal profit motive. So why the harsh treatment of the Indians at so many of the missions? Well, apologists for Serra say that such treatment was necessary because of the nature of the cultures of the natives where the missions were located. What we can say is that the missions definitely went far to alter the tribal life of the Indians where they were based. If they began as attempts to Christianize Native Americans while allowing them to continue some of their native traditions, they ended up going much further in converting the Indians not just to the faith, but to the Spanish culture. And it seems that, more than anything, raises the ire of at least some of Serra's critics.